Matan Pasach Bereishis. Why did the Torah start with Bereishis? Koach Maisav Higit Le'amo. Because God wanted to tell His people the strength of His deeds. Loseis Lohem Nachas Goyim. In order that He should be able to give us the inheritance of nations. That in case, theoretically speaking, the nations of the world would come and say, Listim Atem, you are thieves. Shekovashtem Eretz Shoshivas Amin. You conquered a land that belongs to seven other nations. So we tell them, Bereishis Bara Elokim. God created the world. It's His. He gave it to you temporarily, took it away from you, gave it to us. So in order that we have an answer to these goyim, the Torah prefaced the book of Bereishis, which is our claim to Eretz Yisrael. There's many problems with this Rashi. It's really a Medrash that Rashi is quoting. The Medrash is the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. Many problems with this Medrash. First of all, is it going to help? The Torah prefaced the book of Bereishis that we should have an answer to the guy. I would imagine that if tomorrow the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations would get up and say, I forgot to mention something in all of our debates over the last tens of years. Bereishis bara Elokim es ha-shamayim ve-haaretz. God created the world. True, He may have given Eretz Yisrael temporarily to other people, but He gave it to us. That's it. Closed book. And all of the ambassadors of all the nations of the world would say, hey, how come you didn't say that before? You could have saved a lot of wars and debate. We didn't know that. Now that we know that, no problem. I don't think that's going to happen. It'd be nice if He tried. But I don't think that's going to be the reaction. They'll pull out their books and what the Torah says is me. What? They'll pull out the Koran, they'll pull out who knows what. In any case, so what's going to help? Secondly, even when we were presented with a court case in front of Alexander the Great, the people of Canaan, who still were identifiable at that time, brought us to the world court of Alexander the Great. And their claim was that we took their land. It says in our Torah, Eretz Canaan. It's the land of Canaan. So Gvir ben Psisa went as our lawyer, and when he heard this claim, what do you think he should have said? Bereishis bara Elokim. This is the whole purpose of the book of Bereishis, to answer this claim. No, he didn't say that. You know what he said? You're right. The land of Canaan belongs to you. But there's some other verse in the Torah. And that says that Canaan was cursed to be a slave to his brothers, to his uncles. Shem and Ham. Eved Avadim Yeliecho. So, right. Shem and Yeth. So, you are our slaves. And whatever a slave acquires belongs to its master. In addition, it's been a long time since you've served us, and you owe us a lot of back wages. So they ran away, and it was Shemitah, and they left a lot of crops, and everybody was happy, except for them. So you would imagine that if the whole book of Bereishis was written as an answer to this claim, it should have been used. And it wasn't. Used something else. In addition, why the whole book of Bereishis? Just till Lech Lecha would have been enough to ascertain the fact that Eretz Yisrael was given to Avraham Avinu. Why do you need all the other stories in Bereishis? Even more than that, why does it have to be in Bereishis? We didn't conquer Eretz Yisrael till 7 years after Moshe Rabbeinu died and we entered Eretz Yisrael. We didn't divide it up for another 7 years. 14 years after we entered Eretz Yisrael is when this became a problem. And the Torah was given 40 years earlier. So why was it necessary that right away at the beginning of the Torah, we have this answer, which we didn't need till many years later? Why couldn't it be a footnote at the end of the Torah? A little asterisk, after Leinecho Yisrael, and by the way, Gracious Bar Elohim. So what's the Medrash really saying? So I have many answers. You can look in my book, Outlooks and Insights. There's an answer there, but that's not what I'm going to tell you tonight. I'll tell you two different answers, both along the same lines. The basic answer is that this is not an answer to the Goyim. As we said, they won't accept it. It's not for them. And the sentence, the verse that the Medrash brings down is clear that it's not for the Goyim. What does it say? Koach Maisav Higid Li'amo. God told us the strength of his deeds, the fact that he created the world for our sake, in order that we should be able to get Eretz Yisrael. Not he didn't tell it to the Goyim. Told us. We have to know it. Now the question is, why? Why do we have to know that? Because the lesson is the most fundamental, basic lesson that precedes the entire Torah. Before you can have a mitzvah, before you can have an aveilah, you have to understand this principle. We have to understand that we did not conquer Eretz Yisrael, nor do we conquer anything else. We have to put in our ishtadlus. In conquering lands, that means war. In earning a living, that means going to work. In healing, that means going to a doctor, going to a hospital. But in all those situations, we are not securing the result. We are only fulfilling a condition, a prerequisite. Every single thing in this world is God-given. A person's health is not secured by jogging. It's given to him by God. There have been numerous people, B'li'ai and Hara, who have dropped dead jogging. It's not a guarantee. Nor is eating health food, you could choke on the pills. Nor is going to work a guarantee that you're going to make a living. And nor is going to war a guarantee that you're going to win. No matter how superior your weapons are and your strategies and your wisdom, you have to put in the prerequisite of ishtadlus. You have to put in the effort. But every single thing in this world is a present from God. There's a medrash that says there are three fine presents that God gives human beings. And if you have any one of them, you have everything. One is wisdom, the other is power, and the third is wealth. Any one of those can be used for tremendous purposes. If you have it, it's tremendous benefit. When, says the Medrash, is that true? When they are presents from God. But if you grab them, then they are to your detriment. Now, how can you grab anything? Everything's a present from God. God doesn't want you to have it. You can't grab it. What it obviously means is, if you recognize that your wealth, your power, your wisdom is a present from God, then you'll use it properly, and it's a tremendous benefit. If you think that you grabbed it, then inevitably you're going to abuse it, use it improperly, and it's going to be to your detriment, not to your benefit. Therefore, the whole world, Torah, mitzvahs, depends on this understanding. I don't grab anything. Avram Adam Arishon, what was the first sin in the world? Adam took what he had no right to take. God gave him everything, the entire world, except one measly tree. and he couldn't hold himself back from taking what was not given to him. Cain and Hevel fought over what? The world's mine. I want, I want. Grab it. And so too, all sin, all not doing mitzvahs, is because people don't understand this principle, that every single thing you have, from your very life, and everything else, is a present. So, if God gave you the present, use it. If he denied you the present, then don't grab it. It's not for you. And that is an incentive to keep mitzvahs and an incentive not to do averus. If you understand that everything you have is given to you by God and you grab nothing. And if you're not allowed to take it and you have to grab it against God's will, then that's prohibited. So therefore, we have to know that not only didn't we steal Eretz Yisrael, we didn't even conquer it. We didn't take it. We were given it as a present by God with a condition that we put in the effort of taking it. But it's a present. We had to put in the effort. But don't think for a minute that you took that land. Because if you think you took it, then there's no preface for the entire Torah. So therefore, the whole book of Bereishis, which speaks about the tzaddikim, the others who understood this, who looked at everything in their life as a present from God and functioned in that way, contrasted with Cain and Hevel, the Dor HaMabul, the Dor HaFlaga, Lot, Abimelech, Paro, throughout the book of Bereishis, we see those people who think that this world is a grab bag, and those people who understand this world is a present from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, the entire book of Bereishis is to let us know in great detail this idea. We did not take Eretz Yisrael. We don't take anything. Everything God gives us is a present, even though we have to put in the effort. So the lesson is for us, and it's a lesson that unless you have that lesson, you can't have the Torah. So the whole book of Bereishis teaches us that lesson. That's one idea. The second idea I was thinking of is Yisrael, the Oraisa, the Kuchabrichu Chavu. The Jewish people, the Torah, and God are one. Can't have one without the other. God's manifestation in this world is through the Jewish people. If we don't exist, then God does not have his representatives in this world. The Jewish people, obviously without God, are nothing. The Torah, obviously, is God's representative of God's will. So the Torah and God are identified with each other. The Torah and the Jewish people are identified. Because if we would not have accepted the Torah, then the world wouldn't exist. So the Jewish people and the Torah go together. And the Jewish people would be nothing had it not been for the Torah. So everything, God, the Torah, and the Jewish people are one. They depend on each other. The place where that unity is most intense is Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is the place for Torah. This is the place that God intended the Torah to be kept. It's the only place in the world where the Torah can be kept completely. Because there are many mitzvahs that only apply in Eretz Yisrael. No matter how frum you are, you never could keep those mitzvahs in Borough Park. Impossible. So, this is it. This is the place. More than that. The Torah, even the mitzvahs that we can keep outside of Eretz Yisrael and have to keep there, were meant, basically, to be kept in Eretz Yisrael. We just celebrated Sukkot. Why do we celebrate Sukkot in the autumn? It should be right after Pesach. It celebrates our being in the desert. That's when we went into the desert. One of the reasons given by the tour is that if Sukkot would have been in the summer, when it's very hot and people go out and sit in pergolas, then it wouldn't be obvious that we're going out to sit in the sukkah for the sake of a mitzvah. It would look like we're going out to get some fresh air. If Sukkot would be in the winter, when it's extremely cold, then it would be very uncomfortable to go out and sit in the Sukkot. So God said, I'm going to give you the mitzvah in the autumn. When it's not so cold that it's uncomfortable, but it's not so hot that it's not obvious you're doing it for the sake of the mitzvah. Now, that doesn't apply almost anywhere else in the world except here. I used to live in Miami. Sukkot was extremely hot. It was still summer in Miami. And people were going out in their pergolas in Sukkot time too. So, what the Torah said wasn't given in a time when it's hot doesn't apply to Miami. I lived in Cleveland also. Sukkot time in Cleveland was freezing cold. Slept in sleeping bags in the Sukkot. Sometimes it snowed. In New York sometimes it snows Sukkot time. And there's big shilas when the schach is covered with snow. The Torah wasn't meant for New York or Cleveland. Surely not Siberia. So when the Torah was given, it was given for Eretz Yisrael. That's where it applies. Never. We're in Golis. So we have to keep the Torah outside of Eretz Yisrael. But it was meant, ideally, for Eretz Yisrael. Another thing that hit me recently, those of you from England can appreciate this. I was in England over the summer for a week. You know what time Shabbos comes in England in the summer? About 9 o'clock. Shabbos was over like 10:30. They told me that's not bad. I was in London. I said, go to Gateshead. Or even farther north. Shabbos isn't over till almost 12. They go to sleep, make Havdalah the next morning. Who in the world ever daven Mincha Shabbos at 9 o'clock at night? That was not God's intention. The Shabbos should be kept in England. Here, most of the year, it's without the intervention of summertime, daylight savings time, it's a pretty much an hour difference here and there, summer and winter. So the Torah was meant for Eretz Yisrael, and there in Eretz Yisrael are these three things at their most intense. God is called the God of this land because His divine providence is closest, most intimate, and strongest in Eretz Yisrael. Compared to the relationship that a Jew has with God in Eretz Yisrael, the relationship in outside of Eretz Yisrael is like you don't have a God. Comparatively, it's like not having a God. So Chazal say, the Torah was meant most intensely for Eretz Yisrael. Here's the place where all the mitzvahs can be kept. Nowhere else. There can't be a Beis HaMikdash somewhere outside of Eretz Yisrael. It has to be in Eretz Yisrael, in a certain place. Mitzvahs like Kluyas Baretz are only in Eretz Yisrael. Nowhere else. And the Jewish people find their strength, their strongest, intense manifestation in Eretz Yisrael. Atza Echad, you God are one. Shincha Echad, Mika Amacha Yisrael, Goy Echad Baretz. Where are the Jewish people? One nation, only in Eretz Yisrael. In Chutz Laretz, we're Mefuzar U'Meforad Beinu Am. We're scattered. In Eretz Yisrael, we have the potential for unity. And you are all thinking, what are you talking about? Unity? This is the most fragmented place in the world. You have two Jews, you have three parties. You have one Jew, you have three parties. So the answer is, that's the biggest proof of the potential for unity here in Eretz Yisrael. Because Zelo Mazeh, wherever you see a tremendous potential for the negative, is the equal potential for the positive. Always equal. Eretz Yisrael is the most potentially holy, pure place in the world. But you know what existed in Eretz Yisrael way back? Sodom and Amorah. The most tame, the most opposite of Kedusha. Yerushalayim has the potential for holiness, has the potential for gay parades too. Same potential. So if we see what kind of divisiveness can exist only in Eretz Israel, imagine what kind of unity can exist here. Only unity. So, the unity of the Jewish people, the Torah, and God's relationship all are at their peak in Eretz Israel. So, if you want to be able to have a Torah, you need to know that our claim to Eretz Israel is a valid one. And the world has to know that. Whether they accept it or not is irrelevant. We have to say it. We have to say we're not Ganavim. We don't have to be squeamish and apologetic. We have to be assertive and say very clearly we didn't steal this land. Because Chas v'Shalom, if Eretz Israel got to us by stealing, then Zechul Hashem, that means the whole foundation of Torah, the whole foundation of the Jewish people, and the whole foundation of our relationship with God is based on stealing. What a Chilul Hashem. So we have to be emphatic for ourselves and for the world. And before the Torah starts with the first mitzvah, we have to know that we have a claim to Eretz Israel. It's our land. There's not even a trace of theft or stealing, because the whole Torah, the Jewish people, and our relationship to God is based on this land. And that's another reason why, before the Torah started, and it had to be clear. And clarity is only knowing the whole book of Bereishis, with all of the commentaries, do you really understand who this land was given to, who Avram was, and who Yitzchak was, and who Yaakov was, and why they went down to Mitzrayim, and why God took us out of Mitzrayim. You need the entire Sefer Bereishis to understand that properly. Every detail. There's a Rashbam. In order to really understand something properly, you have to know every single detail, what came before, what comes after. He says that all the parshios of Vayeshev and Miketz and Vayigash and Vayechi is that later on, when the Torah says, B'shivim nefesh, Yordu Avosecha Mitzrayimah, your ancestors went down to Egypt with 70 souls, that we know what that meant. We need four parshios with all the details of Yosef and his brothers to know that they went down to Egypt with 70 souls? Yeah. Because to really understand it, all of its details, how they got there, why they went down, why there were 70, who the 70 were, you have to know all those parshios. You have to know every single detail. Then you know what that means. If you don't know every detail, you know what it means approximately, but you don't know it totally. So to know that Eretz Israel belongs to us, and who it was given to, and why it was given, and who these people were, you need the whole book of Bereishis. I was thinking, maybe that's a new meaning to what Chazal say, Derech Eretz Kodma Latov. We normally understand Derech Eretz means Midos Tovos, good behavior, receives a Torah. But according to this Rashi, he has a different meaning. Derech Eretz, the way of our acquiring and understanding our connection to Eretz Israel, Kodma Latorah, comes before the Torah, before the first mitzvah. Because the whole book of Bereishis is Derech Eretz. It's the way that familiarizes us with Eretz Israel and our claim to it. And that precedes the rest of the Torah. That precedes the mitzvahs of the Torah that started when the Jewish people as a people were given that first mitzvah. Okay. The next topic...
Yeah.
What?
You should be a foreign minister.
I should be a foreign minister? If that's what's in store for me, then I'm happy I'm hoarse. I wish that on me as much as I wish on Rabbi Lau to become president of this country. If he's smart, for the country's sake, it'd probably be very good. For his sake, be a terrible thing. He is way beyond, his COVID is way beyond being the president of this country.
Why does he want it?
I don't know if he wants it.
Why?
No idea. I never spoke to him about it. But if you listen to me, that's not for him. His COVID, his Mahamad, and as soon as you get involved, you see. Right? There are people who want to destroy you. True, not true, half true, whatever. And Rahmanu Litzlam, the same will happen to him, only maybe other things, whatever, who knows. People want to destroy somebody, nothing can stop them. Nothing. There's always something you can enlarge, or whatever.
You shouldn't
have a religious person there. What? You have a government with that? No, I didn't say that. I just said for personally, for Rabbi Lau's sake, he doesn't need that sort. When there'll be a government in which a religious person can function properly, then that would be ideal. But under the circumstances, the kind of government we have now, the kind of people that are in charge, the kinds of power clans or whatever, the kind of things that people would love to do, and this Lieberman would like to create another Soviet Union over here with a dictator. I think he would like to be the dictator. Him and Omer together. Maybe they'll resurrect Sharon. So then it's what religious people can do is save what they can. But that they should be able to function and accomplish fine, positive things, very, very unlikely.
Rabbi, your opening remarks were that we should be able to tell the non-Jew that this was the land. I accept some of that, what you've said, but, and believe me, I was very involved in explaining to non-Jews in England about being Jewish and so on. But don't you think all those wonderful opening remarks which you mentioned tonight would be a wonderful education to Jews?
100%, I agree.
Everywhere. Those that don't accept.
100%. Before we can convince the non-Jews, we have to convince the Jews first. Okay, the next topic, less controversial, is Shabbos. We speak about every Yontif, and we have not spoken, I think at one point, we must have spoken about Shabbos here, but not on a regular basis. Shabbos somehow, because it comes every week, gets cheated out of a time of the year that you speak about. So the obvious time is Parshas Bereishis, where the Torah mentions Shabbos for the first time. So even though what I'm going to tell you is a lot more material than the time we have, but I at least want to mention a few points about what Shabbos is all about. You know, there are two aspects of Shabbos, but it goes way beyond the two aspects that you're familiar with. There's a Tosfos that says that on Shabbos, the Torah says, "Uvayom haShabbos shnei kvasim b'nei shana tmimim." And that is what's it called. Tosfos says that is the motif of Shabbos: double duality, two sheep. Is the sacrifice of Shabbos. Shomar v'zachar. The dibur echad nemu. So Shabbos has two aspects. The shomar v'zachar. Shabbos is male and female. Other two aspects. Everything about Shabbos is double. The mom, two portions, fell for Shabbos. We have lecha mishnah. Everything Shabbos is double. What's this duality, this doubleness of Shabbos? There's a medrash that says that Shomar v'Zachar that was said b'dibur echad is similar to a lot of other things in the Torah that were said b'dibur echad, that were said two separate things at the same time by God. All the other things are things that on the surface are contradictory. For instance, the Torah says you're not allowed to marry your sister-in-law. Yet the same Torah says that if your brother dies without children, there's a mitzvah to marry his wife, Yibum. The Torah says You're not allowed to wear wool and linen together. The same Torah says that in tzitzis, if you're wearing a linen garment, you have to put tchelis, which is wool, on the garment. Seemingly contradictory, but they were said by the same God at the same time. Not only are they not contradictory, they're part of the same plan. The same reason why here it's prohibited, here it's permitted. Torah says you can't light fires on Shabbos, but the Torah commanded us to bring sacrifices, which entail lighting fires on Shabbos. Same thing with Dibur Echad. Similarly, Shamar v'Zachar v'Dibur Echad. Now, Shamar is usually understood to be the negative aspect of Shabbos. Don't do work. Zachar is make kiddush, enjoy the Shabbos. There doesn't seem to be any contradiction. Don't work, make kiddush, enjoy the Shabbos. There's no contradiction. And yet, the Medrash groups this together with the other ones where there seems to be a contradiction. So, let's just tonight try to explain that, and maybe next time we'll expand a little bit and speak a little bit more about Shabbos, and plus something to do with the next parashios or whatever. Shamshon Fol Hirsch, this is not his original idea, this is an idea that is echoed by many, many Mefarshim, but he says it in a very concise interesting way. He says, one of the lessons of Shabbos is that 6 days a week, we human beings were given tremendous power, tremendous latitude by God. We can create, we can destroy, we can almost do anything. But you get carried away sometimes. And you begin to think that it's your world. And you can do anything you want. You're the master. I once saw a quote from a doctor. This was in the early 1970s. The quote said, given enough money and enough time, there is no disease that modern science can't conquer. This was before they discovered AIDS. It's absurd. No disease that modern science, they can't conquer paralysis of the vocal cord. That's what my doctor said. They have no idea why it comes and they can't do anything about it, pretty much. So they don't have enough money, right? That's absurd. All the money in the world, all the time in the world, maybe you just can't do it. People get carried away and they think they're in control of everything, except maybe the one little thing that went wrong, but if it doesn't go wrong the next time, I'm in control. I remember when the space shuttle, the first one, blew up. It was because there was a seal that wasn't proper. It was a leak. So from then on, they said, what did they say? From now on, nothing could happen, because now we know how to make the seals properly. As if nothing else could go wrong. Something else also went wrong. Not a seal. Next time. People get carried away with themselves. And they begin to think that they're the masters of the world. It's like a marshal that I made up once. It was a very wealthy man who owned a factory. And he decided he doesn't want to work. He owns the factory. So he hired a manager to do everything. Hire, fire, oversee the work, paid him a nice salary, and he went off skiing in Aspen. And he told him, send me my profit check every month. The manager worked like this for a year or two, and then he said to himself, why do I have to work so hard? If I sell the factory, I could live off the interest on the profit. So he put an ad in the paper, selling the factory. The owner of the factory sees the ad. They're selling my factory. Calls up the manager. He says, what are you doing? It's not your factory. He said, you got so used to doing everything here, you think it's yours. So you know what? One day a week, I'm closing the factory. And you can't go in, even if you want to. And you can't use my machinery. So one day a week, you remember, you're not the boss. You're only a worker. Do you know what a statement it is when you don't answer your telephone on Shabbos? Do you know what kind of, first of all, self-control that takes? Not to answer a phone. I pay the bills. It's my phone. I picked it out. It's not. By not answering it, it's God's phone. And if he says, I can't answer it, then no matter how much I paid for it, no matter how much Bezek put it together, it's not Bezek's phone, it's not my phone, it's the Rabbanu Shlom's phone. And if he says you can't answer it, you can't answer it. It's a tremendous testimony to the fact that I know that I am not the boss. And knowing that God created the world, and I didn't, also puts the whole Torah into perspective. Because the reason that we have to keep the Torah is not because we owe God, you know, a favor, wants us to keep his Torah. After all, he gave us life, he gave us everything we have, so we might as well listen to him. Or because God is up there, he could zap me with a lightning bolt, and therefore I better do what he wants. There's a much more fundamental reason why we have to keep the Torah. And I always like to tell the following story to illustrate it, so I'll tell it. Some of you probably heard it, and people who are here new, or even somewhat new, have never heard it. When I first came to Eretz Yisrael, so I bought the first and last car, new car that I ever had. Because I had, at those times, there was rights for Olim Chadashim, very fine rights. And one of them was to buy a car tax-free that reduces the price, at least by half. The car was also even much more cheap, much cheaper, because it was assembled here in Eretz Israel by Ford Motor Company. Now they don't have that anymore. It was a Ford Transit that was assembled here, and the price was $8,000. That was the whole car. So I was able to buy a car. There's only one problem. That in those days, you could not buy a car and pay it off, like any civilized country. You had to pay cash up front, the entire thing, before you could have the car. At that time also, this was about 25 years ago, the rate of exchange of the old shekel to the dollar was 1,000 shekel to a dollar at the time. Remember those days? 1,000 shekel to the dollar. And the largest bill that they had was a 100 shekel bill. So I cashed in $8,000 and I got 8 million shekel in 100 shekel bills. I had a suitcase full of 100 shekel bills and stacks, which I took on a bus to Tel Aviv to buy my car. I felt like a drug dealer. So I get to Tel Aviv, I put the suitcase on the table, the guy starts looking through, make sure there's no blind paper or whatever, it's all bills, and he takes the suitcase, gives me the keys to the car, here's your car, it's over there, it's yours. I get to the door, and he says, wait, I forgot something. Calls me back. I was ready for anything, because when I went to order the car, the guy tells me, do you want the standard car, or do you want extras? Now, I never bought a new car in America, but I knew enough that extras means, do you want a stereo with 2 speakers, 4 speakers, do you want air conditioning? Well, those are normal extras, right? Electric seats. So I said, well, could you give me an example of what extras I can have? He said, yeah, do you want windows? I guess I'll go for that extra. The windshield comes standard. The side windows were extra. So in any case, so I was ready for anything. What did he forget? He said, I forgot to give you this. What is this? This is the owner's manual to the car. So what's that? I never had an owner's manual to any of my used cars I bought in the past. He said, this tells you what grade of gasoline, right, petrol, to put in the gas tank, and what grade of oil to put in the crankcase, and what detergent to use on the upholstery, and so on. Tells you how to use the car. Now, I felt like telling this guy, What a chutzpah. You're going to tell me how to use my car? I just gave you 8 million shekel for this car. And you're going to tell me what to put in the gas tank? I'll put whatever I want in the gas tank. It's my car. Obviously, that's absurd. Because true, I have free choice. My car. And I could do what I want with it. But unfortunately, I didn't design the car. The Ford Motor Company designed the car. And they designed it, unfortunately, to run on gasoline, not on water. So unless I can redesign the car, I can put water in the gas tank, but it's not going to go anywhere. I could even put the wrong grade of gasoline in the gas tank, and it will go, but it'll burn out the motor slowly. Same thing. If I believe that God created the world, and I know I didn't, then He designed me. And He designed the world. And He gave us an owner's manual of how He designed me to function. What He designed me to eat, and what He designed me to wear, and what He designed me to say and not to say, and what to think and what not to think, and when to work and when not to work. And I have free choice. I can decide to eat what God didn't design me to eat, but I'm burning out my motor. And when I have to get to where I'm going, eventually, I may not be able to get there. So that is the most fundamental reason for keeping the Torah. The Torah is the owner's manual to the world. And if I don't follow the design of the designer, I'm burning out my motor. So I have free choice. It's mine. But I didn't make myself. I didn't design myself. So that's one aspect of Shabbos. One aspect of Shabbos is you are not the boss. You are not the designer. You're a created being. You were designed by a creator. You're a worker here. Don't get carried away. Work within the framework that was given to you. Don't go out of that framework. That's Shabbos. It's a very negative lesson. But Shabbos has another aspect to it. Shabbos is Me'ein Olam Haba. The 6 days of work culminate with Shabbos. The 6 days of work culminate with Shabbos that's like the world to come. It teaches me that this world prepares and creates the world to come. What you do in this world creates that spiritual world to come. And who creates it? We do. By what we do. We're the ones who create our world to come by doing mitzvahs, by not doing averas, by building the world. And in that respect, we are partners with God in creation. That's what it says in this week's Sefer. Asher bara Elohim la'asos. God created a imperfect world. Raw materials. La'asos. That man should build and perfect the world and perfect himself and create the world to come. Turnus Rufus HaRosha, the Roman, once asked Rabbi Akiva, what's better, what man makes or what God makes? He expected Rabbi Akiva, of course, to say, what God makes is better than what man makes. And then he would say, if that's the case, then we Goyim are better than you Jews. Because we are uncircumcised like God made us, and you're circumcised like some human being made you. You're man-made. We're God-made. So Rabbi Akiva surprised him, and he said, of course, what man makes is better than what God makes. So Tullus Rufus says, how could you say such a thing? He says, simple. You're going home to eat lunch. God made wheat. Your wife made bread and cake. I'll take the bread and cake over the wheat anytime. Obviously, what man makes is better than what God makes. Meaning, this idea. What man... what God made was on purpose imperfect. On purpose the raw materials. Because He wants us to finish it off. To perfect it. Perfect ourselves, and in that way earn and create our world to come. In that respect, one day a week we don't work. We don't create. Not because we're being told, you're just the workers. It's off limits to you. You're not the boss. Just the opposite. Do you know what you can accomplish with your work in this world? You know which works we don't do? The works that went into building the Mishkan. That means by working, being creative, we can ultimately create a place where God's presence comes into the world. So who caused that? We did. We are partners with God in creation. So Shabbos teaches us how important we are. We are God's partners. That's contradictory. The negative aspect of Shabbos, Shomer, says you're a nobody. You're a worker. You're not the boss. Don't get carried away. You're not allowed to even come into the factory on Shabbos because you should know it's not yours. And therefore, the rest of the week, do what you're told in the framework that you were designed to function. The other lesson of Shabbos, Zachar is Yom HaShabbos, enjoy the Shabbos. It's like the world to come. Who creates the world to come? You do, by perfecting the world. And in that respect, you're finishing off God's creation. You're a partner in creation. Seems contradictory. But they were said at the same time. There's no contradiction. Why? Because if you think you're the boss, you're a nobody. But if you understand you're not the boss, you're a worker. But the boss made you his partner. If you understand the framework within which you have to function, within that framework, you are a very important worker because you're the owner's partner. But if you think you're the owner and you think you can function outside that framework, you think you can grab, then you're a nobody. So both lessons go together. You're a nobody if you think you're the boss. You're a very big somebody in the boss's eyes if you understand in what framework you have to function. There's no contradiction between them at all. They work hand in hand. The two sides of the same coin. So that is the foundation of Shabbos. Shomer v'zachar. On the one hand, we're not the balabatim. We're not the boss. We're workers here. On the other hand, you understand that. You function within that framework as God's worker. You're God's partner. You're very important. And the whole world was created for your sake. And you're the one who perfects the world and brings it to the level of the world to come. Next time, Mitzvah Hashem, we'll continue this idea and see how it applies to some other aspects of Shabbos.
Yeah. So when God said Hashem Barak Nasa, that was already where the world was at its altar, where we picked up bread from the ground. We didn't have to crush it. It came out of the ground. Therefore, there was no completion by man in that respect. So
even what's it called in those, the beginning, okay, the question was right away in the beginning, it didn't last more than a few hours, but in the very beginning man didn't have to seemingly perfect the world. It was perfect to the point where bread grew on trees, not as we know it, but didn't have to be refined, didn't have to be prepared, just ate what came off the tree and it was totally refined. That was only in certain areas of work. But in other areas, the fruit of Gan Eden, man's own spiritual ascension, all of those things, he wasn't created perfect. He was created imperfect and had to perfect himself. But he wouldn't have had to work hard in that physical area because that wasn't necessary. He would have worked totally in spiritual areas. Once he sinned, then he needed the physical areas also to keep him in place. Then he had to work hard physically in this world because Yofetam Torah im derech eretz she yigia shneim hashkachas avo. But before the avo, before the chet, the physical world to a certain degree was more finished, perfected, even though there were parts that still had to be perfected, but the spiritual world was still totally imperfect.